Radio.
Hello, Earthlings. It's me, Duncan Trussell, and you're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. And you're one of billions of people who are trapped in the gravity well we call planet Earth. A poor, lonely planet floating in the infinite void with no one to text, no one to call. But if she could text, she'd have to use a giant phone.
This is for all lonely people thinking that life has passed them by. Don't give up until you drink from the silver cup and ride that highway in the sky. This is for all the single people thinking that love has left them dry. Don't give up until you drink from the silver cup. You never know.
That song's called Lonely People by America, and it's one of the greatest contemporary Christian songs that I know of. It's written by Dan Peek, who later produced the Christian band Jars of Clay, and the line, "Ride that highway in the sky," was later changed to "Give your heart to Jesus Christ." Once you realize this is a Christian song, it starts making a lot more sense, because I don't know what a highway in the sky is. I have no idea what a silver cup is. How are you telling lonely people to drink from a silver cup and then go, fly in a spaceship? It's confusing. Doesn't make sense. But when you realize that he's using one of a classic symbol from Christianity, which is a cup, and there's a lot of, you could argue what this cup he's talking about is. A silver cup. Is he talking about the grail? The holy grail? Is he talking about the communion? Is he talking about drinking the blood of Jesus Christ? Or is it a little more sinister? And is he talking about that famous scene in the Garden of Gethsemane where Jesus Christ decided that he didn't want to get crucified after all? This is from Matthew 26:36 to Matthew 26:46. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Could you men not keep watch with me for 1 hour?" he asked. Are you seriously passing out right now? Even Jesus' friends were dicks. Think about that. You're bummed out, you're depressed, you're about to get beaten by monkey descendants and nailed to a cross, and these assholes you've been wandering around with doing miracles in front of passed out because they drank too much. This is a... from Jesus Christ Superstar.
I only want to say, if there is a way, take this cup away from me, for I don't want to taste its poison, feel it burn me. I have.
God, that's great. If you've never listened to Jesus Christ Superstar, you gotta download it right now. It's so good. The point is, we all inevitably find ourselves face down on the ground asking, why do I have to experience this level of suffering? There's gotta be some way to get out of this. And I think the answer to that problem is articulated beautifully in this fantastic Jonathan Richman song.
When we refuse to suffer,
when we refuse to feel. Your life becomes a bore, and you're suffering even more. When we refuse to suffer, yeah, when we refuse to feel, you're suffering more. Your life gets boring and gray, gray, gray.
That's When We Refuse to Suffer by Jonathan Richman, and that's from her beauty, her the album, Because Her Beauty is Raw and Wild. Ah, you gotta take the lash, friends. You gotta take the lash. So what's the silver cup? What's the answer to overcoming your loneliness? What is the message for all the single people out there feeling that life has passed them by? It's to drink from the cup of suffering. That's what it is. To let yourself surrender. Saraswati is the name of Raghu Marcus's wife, and Raghu Marcus, he's been on the podcast a few times. He actually runs the Love Serve Remember Foundation, which is Ram Dass's foundation. She said the most beautiful thing ever, which is the bridge between suffering and grace is surrender. And that moment in the Garden of Gethsemane, when Jesus said, "As you will," that's surrender. It means acknowledging the truth of the situation you're in. Acknowledging the fact that you've got to take some kind of action. Surrender is not passivity. Surrender is the truth of the terrain that you're operating on. That's what it is. So you got to look at the relationship, look at the job, look at yourself. Is this the way you want to be? Are you putting off some temporary, intense heartbreak because you're afraid you can't handle the pain? It's no different than when you've had too much to drink and you're laying in your bed and the room is spinning and you're trying to put off throwing up. You know that when you throw up, you're going to feel a lot better. And sure, those few minutes when the food truck burrito that you ate that was made by the guy who had sores all over his hands and a milky eye, when that comes spraying out of your mouth soaked in tequila and vodka and gin and three Chimays, it's not going to feel great. It's going to be horrible. But when that shit gets out of your body, you're going to feel so much better because you did what you had to do. And it's like that for everything. Heartbreak sucks, but it's a hell of a lot better than the low-level anxiety that comes from being in a relationship where you're not being appreciated, where you're being treated like shit, or where it's just not working out. Being poor sucks. Not having money sucks. But it's a hell of a lot better than being in a toxic work environment where you're surrounded by monsters or where you're engaged in some kind of activity that is not satisfying your life. And this action that we all want to put off seems like poison. And it seems like it's going to kill us. And in a way, it will kill you. It's going to kill what isn't real. But hey, last I checked, all great medicine temporarily tastes like shit. So here's my challenge to you, my dear friends. If there's something you've been putting off, if there's something you've been avoiding, if there's some truth you've been ignoring, if there's some action that you need to take, I challenge you this week to take the action. I don't mean be irresponsible. Don't do something dumb. Don't do something that's not thought out. Don't do something that lacks strategy. Don't just quit the job because it seems romantic. And don't just get out of the relationship because you're making hasty decisions. I'm just saying, listen to that still, quiet voice inside of you that's telling you the truth. Just do that. But stop ignoring what you know you've got to do. Sometimes an action isn't something you do all at once either. It's not like you just suddenly, it's not like there's the solution to everything involves one action. Maybe it's a lot of actions. Maybe it's a series of actions. Who knows? But what I'm telling you is Stop ignoring the truth. Turn and face the facts. And if you've got to throw that burrito up, throw that fucking burrito up. We're going to feel so much better. Stop the podcast now. If it's an easy action that you can take, stop the podcast now. Make the call. If it's not an easy action to take, stop the podcast and write down the truth. Write down the thing that you've been ignoring and read it to yourself. Look at it. What does it say? Does it say, I don't think she loves me anymore? Does it say, I don't think I love her anymore? Does it say, I'm tired of my job? Does it say, I need to go to the doctor? Does it say, I need to call an accountant? Well, that's what you need to do. So go for it. Stop laying face down in the garden, you filthy Galilean Christling. Get up, wake up your drunk friends, and go get crucified in style. Do it! You're going to feel so much better, I promise you. Speaking of just doing something, I've got to get this podcast up. I've been working on this intro since Monday. So, we got a great podcast with Daniele Bolelli, but first, some quick business. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is sponsored by the fantastic company Squarespace. Squarespace is a website that will give you the tools necessary to create an aesthetically pleasing, professional-level website without having to hire a web designer or to learn to code HTML. It used to be in the old days that if you wanted to design a website, you would have to sit in your living room and cut a goat's throat and pour the goat's blood on a pentagram made out of HTML code. What would happen is a web designer would come climbing out of the anus-like tunnel that opened up in your floor. He would come clambering out, his shirt stained with drool, mayonnaise, French fries, remnants and bits of old cocaine that he snorted to learn how to design websites. He would immediately go slithering into your jacket or wherever your wallet was stored and take all of your money away. And in exchange, he would give you some shit website and never talk to you again. Also, he would take your soul, and when you died, you would be dragged into hell by the very same web designer, and he would spend infinity shoving his rancid asshole into your face and howling at the rocky cave ceiling that covers the lake of fire that all those who hire shitty web designers are damned to burn in for eternity. You don't have to experience that anymore. Now, all you have to do is go to squarespace.com, and you can sign up for a membership and use this website to build any kind of website that you want. You want to start a blog, a business, you want to start selling t-shirts, toenails, you want to start selling old scraps of cloth, you can sell that now. And by the way, there's probably a market for it. Basically, if you can make something smell like a pussy, you can sell it. That's the truth, guys. That's the kind of society we live in. So don't tell me that the economy is bad when all you need is some cotton soaked in something that vaguely smells like a vagina and you can make $19.99. Go to squarespace.com. Sign up for a trial membership if you want to. You get 15 days to figure out if the website works for you. For $8.99 a month, you can actually get your own domain name if you sign up for a year. I don't know if smellslikepussy.com is available, but buy it. Start selling stuff, man. That's where we're at right now. Speaking of all the lonely people, there's so many lonely people out there that you can actually sell your stinky socks, guys. Valueless crap. There's a market for valueless crap in the world right now. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's what you want to do. I'm just saying that's how great it is out there. Imagine if you have something worth something. There's no excuse to put off that business anymore because you don't know how to make a website or you can't afford a web designer. $8.99 a month is nothing. It's nothing. They've got a lot of other great plans. They have shopping carts. They have the ability to process credit cards. It's all there. I like this business. And the proof that they're a great website is that the website Squarespace was made using Squarespace, which I don't really understand how that works. It seems like you would need a time machine. Maybe they have a time machine. I don't know. Go to squarespace.com, sign up for a trial membership. If you put in the code word Duncan, you get 10% off. Squarespace.com. We're also brought to you by Shure Design T-shirts. Shure Design T-shirts create some of the softest, most delightful T-shirts known to man. Oh my God, what a lovely company this is. And these shirts have all kinds of amazing designs on them. Saw a lot of Shure Design T-shirts at the Ram Dass retreat, which shouldn't come as a surprise to any of you who've been to the website, because every shirt has Ganesh. It basically looks like a DMT alien sneezed on it, and the splatter of the DMT alien's transdimensional mucus created some kind of combination of mandalas, hieroglyphs, Sanskrit, and Hindu visionary imagery. So go to SureDesignT-shirts.com, order one of their great t-shirts. If you put my name in, you get 10% off. Finally, there is an Amazon portal located at DuncanTrussell.com. The next time you find yourself wanting to buy something from Amazon.com, and I don't know why you wouldn't buy something from Amazon.com, unless you actually want to go trekking out into the icy, freezing snow. If you haven't noticed, it's the beginning of the next ice age. We might be in the precipice of the singularity, and the icy cold that is enveloping the Earth is actually being exploded backwards through time by the portal opened up by the robotic messiah that's about to be generated by the combination of all the processors on Earth summoning some futuristic cyborg that's going to either carry us into heaven or devour us and fly off to Mars. It's a dangerous time. That's all I'm saying. There's no need to go shopping outside of your house. Go through the portal located at DuncanTrussell.com, and they give us a very small percentage of whatever you buy. So that's a way that you could support this podcast just by living your normal life. We also accept donations. There's a donation button located at DuncanTrussell.com, and we've got a lot of cool merchandise. Really badass t-shirts, posters, and stickers are located at DuncanTrussell.com. So if you feel so compelled, if you want to give a nice gift to your grandmother, if you want to send a t-shirt to a senator or a congressman, you could do that. You can also wear one yourself, and maybe you'll run into somebody who listens to this podcast, and that person will be your soulmate. And the very evening of the day that you wear that shirt for the first time will be one where you find yourself embroiled in the most intense love affair of your life. I can't tell you how happy it makes me to imagine your Duncan Trussell Family Hour t-shirt crumpled up on the floor next to the underwear of someone you love. I hope that happens. Shit, I hope it happens for me. Okay, guys, today's guest has written On the Warrior's Path. He's also written Create Your Own Religion. He's got a fantastic podcast called The Drunken Taoist Podcast. He is a university professor and somebody I'm proud to call my friend. He's returning to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. So open your third eyes and send out big, fat sprays of love in the direction of the great Daniele Bolelli. Hare Krishna. Thanks for listening. I love you guys. Mwah, 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 mwah. Praise the seven dark goats of hell, the eggs of Asmodeus, the dragon queen, the tears that fell from Jesus' eyeballs down onto the dark centurion soldier who just speared him in the side. I'm here with one of the greatest guests on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, Daniele Bolelli. Welcome!
That's quite an intro, man.
Thanks, man. I think I'm getting better at him.
I'm quite moved by it all.
Oh God, I hope you're doing great, man. I know how you're doing, so I have to like manufacture that I don't know that you're. Are we allowed to talk about that at all?
We are allowed to talk about whatever.
Yeah. So earlier we were talking in my kitchen, and You're having some medical problems,
I keep having them. It's by now is Mr. Illness number two. I had one that lasted a few months. Nobody figured out what the fuck ever happened, but it lasted for months. So a million doctors, nobody figured it out. Eventually, I was okay. Now I'm going through completely different Mr. Illness number two. Ah, the human body is so much fun.
So it's weird to be in a human body. It's so disconcerting, and it's the... The culture is based on, you know, ignoring the fact that these meat skyscrapers that we spend our time in,
right,
hanging out in the penthouse of our thoughts, are basically burning via the inhalation of oxygen.
Uh-huh.
Like we're having this biochemical fire. So the skyscraper we're in is just slowly burning down with us in it. And there's no exit. There's no way. There's no door out of this thing. There's no escape hatch from the human body. You're. This is it, man. You're in there somewhere. Now, where the fuck you are in the skyscraper? Who the hell knows? This is one of the, one of the meditations in Buddhism is like, where are you?
Right.
In your body. Figure it out. Are you your hand? Are you in your head? Are you your thoughts? Are you your heartbeat? Are you the entire body itself? What are you? Find it. Find where you are in that fucking thing. You can't.
Right. It's the Bodhidharma. Bodhidharma, I am not at peace. I am miserable. It's like, well, bring forth this eye that's miserable and I'll fix it. It's like, I can do that. Oh, I already fixed it then. It's done.
It's not there, motherfucker.
Yeah.
So, but that you know, that's some when you're actually going through medical issues, it's like when you're not going through them like I just did, it's easy, or like I'm not currently, not though I have been, it's easy to philosophize about it till you're blue in the face. But when you find yourself experiencing this thing that has been prognosticated by all the great saints, which is like, hey, guess what, motherfucker? You're going to get sick.
Right.
You're going to get old. These are the two inevitable aspects of being a human body, in a human body. And when you get to that point, it's like, okay, man, fill it. How do you find peace in the midst of the sickness itself? Have you found any tricks to this?
No, I just slaughter random people along the way to feel better. I slaughter random people along the way, just inflict pain. Yeah, no, not at all. Actually, it has sometimes the opposite effects. You know, it makes you, if anything, what I notice is that most people tend to react to being in pain. And I use pain loosely because I'm not in pain, but whatever, you know, it's the feeling of physical discomfort, pain, whatever the fuck it can be, that's the situation. People tend to react one of two ways. They either get a lot meaner because they're like, I'm hurting, so fuck you.
Yes.
I'm going to dish it out left and right because, you know, become. Or they go actually the opposite route and suddenly they have, you know, you have the random bout of kidney stone inspired Buddhist compassion, you know, where it's like nobody should ever feel this way.
Yes.
And I don't want to pass this to anyone on earth, even to the shittiest person on the planet. I don't want them to hurt like this. And both can happen. And I'm curious to why people, the why is obvious, you know, you're going through something that is making you very aware of the human condition, but why some people go the hardcore nasty, well, fuck you all then. And why some people become much more compassionate? That's a big question mark.
That is a big question mark. Yeah, it's like when you slam your finger in the door, you kick the dog.
Right, exactly. Or you go, I'm in so much pain. At least you, I'll make you feel a little better right now.
Right.
It really can go both ways.
And human beings are basically God's finger being slammed in the door of time. We're all undergoing this severe agony called human existence. And it doesn't require a physical ailment to feel bad. I mean, that's the one of the things you get from meditation is everybody thinks that fucking meditation is like, you know, a ticket to tranquility or something. You start meditating and then and it's this pleasurable thing. In the same way, everybody thinks love is like a gonna feel good.
Right.
Same misconception about both of these things. It's like, for me, this is the most This is the most regularly I've ever managed to meditate, except for when I was in college and did this internship at a Zen temple. But even then, I wasn't meditating this much. Not to like brag or anything, but I'm getting biceps on my soul. Not really. I'm just kidding.
I am getting biceps on my soul. Please, I want to see how many tweets are gonna go out with this quote.
I'm joking.
That's beautiful.
What it's showing me is not anything more than how there is a vortex of insane fear and insecurity covered up underneath the icy numbness of my ego. And I when you witness that, when you start seeing it, it's like there have been a couple of times where I've just stopped meditating because it's just like, I'm not, fuck this. I'm going to go, you know, clean something.
Yeah.
I don't want to think about this. It's too much.
Right.
That, so the idea that, you know, you have to wait until your body gets sick to suffer is not true at all. Sure. You are suffering.
Right.
Sickness or not. Family good, family bad, relationship good, relationship bad. The odds are very good that underneath it all, if you haven't addressed.
Right. It's degrees of awareness of it all and how much is just being slammed in your face or you can let it sit in the background. Your buddy Ram Dass would say how he had strange experiences on death row, hanging out with death row prisoners. How he said a very large percentage of people who have been convicted of some pretty serious, insane crimes, they look like happy Buddhas at some point because they are people who have given up everything. And in many ways, they have transcended precisely the nasty ego that they were dealing with. Now, one thing that Ram Dass said was, if the Supreme Court was to pardon them tomorrow, at least 3/4 of them would go back exactly to who they were before, and they would lose this particular state of consciousness.
Yeah.
But in the time being, there's that, it does something to you. You know, it does, it really
what
does something.
What is it? What does something to you?
Well, the experience, for example, you're sentenced to death.
Yes.
You know that it's a matter of time before, you know, the electric chair calls.
Yes.
It forces you to give up. It really changes your perception of reality because all the shit that normally people get caught up in, I want to do this in order to get that. I want. It's like, well, you want nothing because you're about, all of it is about to come to an end. So all the stuff that you normally struggle for and are crazy about and all of that, well, none of that matters anymore.
It's the date.
Yeah.
It's the date, isn't
it? Of course.
It's the symbol of the approaching death. It's the symbol of the approaching extinction. Mm-hmm. Is what allows these death row inmates the ability to completely surrender.
Yeah.
And the only difference between those death row inmates and everyone on planet Earth is they know when they're going to die, and everybody on planet Earth doesn't know when they're going to die. So somehow the function of knowing when you're going to die allows you the illusion of – or allows you the luxury – of abandoning the normal contrivances of human psychology and behavior that the rest of society function with on a daily basis.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, because I mean, it is ultimately a psychological trick because the reality is there are going to be a ton of people who are going to die way before a ton of death row inmates.
Yeah.
So it's weird in that sense because they don't think they are and nobody knows that they will be, but they will be
because they haven't faced the truth.
Right. And so, yeah, I mean, there's that existential angst of human existence, which in itself is a trip. You know, when you think about the fact that, yeah, everybody gets old, assuming they are lucky, right? Because the other option is that they don't get old because something nasty and terrible happened to them before that. Everybody gets sick, everybody die, you know, all the the 3 out of the 4 sides of Buddhism, they make life seriously unpleasant in some ways. And yet at the same time, you know, there's all the ecstasies and beauty and fun and, you know, all of the amazing stuff that exists with being having a consciousness, having a body, being alive, all of that.
Yeah.
And yet the problems are pretty damn serious. They are not like some secondary, you know, we stress out. Think about the stuff that people stress out about. You know, you get pissed if somebody cuts you off in traffic and you lost just 80 seconds of your life. And here you are dealing with the entire eternity and we have no damn idea what happens.
Yeah.
Oof, that's unsettling.
Yeah.
That's disturbing that everything you enjoy, well, yeah, enjoy it now because who the fuck knows, right?
Yeah. You know? No, it's not who the fuck knows. It's it you. It will go.
Right. I mean, and it is going every second, right? Because even your body is not the same that it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Your opinions change, your loved one. It's like everything is changed within life, let alone dealing with the afterwards,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, that's existential thoughts are quite a trip in that regard.
Yeah, it's like when you're on an airplane, you don't want to think about how fast you're going. You know, once you really start contemplating the speed and the height, then you can begin to experience that a kind of a very specific type of claustrophobic terror when you realize you're just in a giant metal tube.
Yeah, you look at the material used, you're like, really? That like fucking 1 foot is separating me from being blown out in that's
so that's the game.
Yeah.
So the game is, the party we're at is a party where we are all in a situation of in front of ourselves, in front of each other. We're watching ourselves gradually deteriorate into nothingness. And yet the party is based on ignoring that our costumes are slowly dissolving in front of us.
Right.
So that's the game. If you get too caught up in like – If you get too caught up in embracing the fact that you are a temporary, impermanent mote of consciousness that is going – well, we don't know what's going to happen to it. But if you get too caught up in that, then all of a sudden your lifestyle will change.
Right.
Has to change.
Right, right, right.
And this is why you hear – there's and the cliches begin to emerge, you know, like that awful country song like – I just wish that I could live like I was dying. It's like a country song about somebody with cancer doing the bucket list, running around, going to Fiji, Tahiti, whatever.
You picked the wrong career, man. Quick, get this.
I should have been an interrogator because then I could sing to people and they tell me anything just to shut me up.
Get this man a guitar now.
Live like he was dying. It's like, so, but this is the cliche. The cliche is, you sit in front of the doctor gives you the terminal prognosis, and all of a sudden you're like, I'm going to fucking enjoy my life because I've only got another year to live.
No, and I mean, and that's the part about getting rid of fear because, you know, you have fear because you have attachment. And once is just slamming your face, the fact that you can be attached all you want, but it's going anyway, then some people lose attachment and then you get rid of fear as well. And at that point, it's awesome.
Then you're in heaven.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, you have turned, faced the bull, and the bull is transformed from a bull into an angel, into some embracing, compassionate love field. It's just you got to deal with it. Look, man, it's like either – if I don't know. I don't know how to deal with the terror. Honestly, I think the first thing is to just acknowledge the fact – that underneath that cool, calm exterior of self, down, 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 underneath the frozen lake of your being is a screaming, seizure-racked, horrified being, fully aware of the fact that everything it knows will become nothingness.
The end of Blade Runner, right?
Yeah. Wait, you mean Tears in the Rain?
Sure.
Oh, that's the – do you have that thing memorized?
No, I don't. Even because I watch it in Italian 50 million times and I don't even remember
I'd love to hear that in fucking Italian. Guys, into Blade Runner, I think you could even do this without doing a spoiler, but it's just like – well, no. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Cut ahead. If you've never seen Blade Runner, definitely don't listen to this and definitely turn – why are you listening to podcasts? Why are you doing anything? If you've never seen Blade Runner, all you should be doing is watching Blade Runner, you loon. But in Blade Runner, there's these like – you're dealing with like – it's super advanced cyber like robot like what androids kind of aware of the fact that they're going to die, and What's his name? What's that actor's name? Dolph?
Rutger Hauer.
Oh. What's his name? Rutger Hauer. Not Dolph, the other Dolph guy. I mean, Rutger Hauer is like, gives the greatest fucking monologue about like, I've seen the...
Yep.
What is it? I've seen the ice of something. Or I don't know. He's talking about shit androids get to see if they, when they're flying through space, you know? Space unicorns of Nezelius.
I remember a piece in Italian. Ho visto navi in fiamme al largo dei bastioni di Orione. Which, maybe I met up with the phone book here, but, you know, if you want to check in Italian, no, that's actually the
Hey,
line.
Google, you should make it a rule that your robots that you're making... only can talk in Italian, because that is amazing. What a great language that is, man. God, I'd love to hear that coming out of a robot. Well, man, yeah, we just gotta, you know, it's just dealing with that terror is so, it's either you've dealt with it or you haven't.
Oh, yeah, just to wrap up the Blade Runner thing, there's that line after he goes through all these series of images that are one more poetic and beautiful than the next, of all these crazy wild things that he has experienced. Again, I'm translating from Italian, so I don't know exactly how the original goes, but it goes something like, and all these moments will be lost like teardrops in the rain. And you get this moment of this android cries.
Yes.
And it's just, so there's the humanization of the robot, and it's pretty damn, you know, it's intense.
And also, P.S. improvised line, that was not in the script.
Really?
Yeah.
You kidding me? That was Rutger Hauer, just him doing it?
That's what I read.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like three quarters of the movie right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. He just came through, man. It just came through. That is so... See, I love that, man. I love it. I love it so much because it's such the opposite of the way I am, which is anything that I love, I try to control.
Of course.
The very act of trying to control it causes it to turn into something that I can't love anymore.
Of course. That's the nature of the business, right? That's why doing like the... how do you say it? Is it in English? Is it mandala or mandala?
Nelson Mandela ruined people's ability to confidently say mandala.
Right. Let's say mandala. In any case, Tibetan sand painting, super elaborate, all of that. And, you know, the trip of it all is that when you look at it done, it's like the greatest art ever, right? It's beautiful. This guy spent days and days with the tiny little instruments dropping micro, tiny pieces of, what is it, basically sand,
colored sand,
and they create these, you know, 12-foot wide circle with perfect geometry. All the figures are designed beautifully. You do this whole thing over a week period or something, and then you look at it, you say, wow, that was beautiful, and you sweep it up, you know,
drop it in a river.
Our tendency, the normal thing, is let's put it under glass, let's save it there forever, let's do all this stuff to preserve it because it's such beautiful and amazing art. It needs to survive, it needs to survive forever. And, you know, the whole Buddhist approach is the exact opposite. It's not art for art's sake. You are creating something beautiful, but not in the typical artsy way of, look at this amazing beauty, how cool I did it. You do it. And the second you're done, you enjoy it for a minute, then you sweep it up or you can drop it in the river or whatever it is that you do.
Yeah.
The idea, the ultimate lesson in impermanence, in teaching you that nothing lasts. So you better have enjoyed that week in which you made it.
Yeah.
And you better enjoy those minutes in which you look at it when you're done. But it's not going to last. You know,
not
by the next day, it's all gone. By the next minute, it's all gone.
All gone.
And that's a lesson in impermanence right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the beginning of that. That is, you know, in Christianity, they say the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom.
Right.
But it really, I think, the fear of God is the way that desert religion people came up with the exact same Buddha. Fear of God in Christianity is everything is impermanent in Buddhism. It's like fear of God means understand that you have no control over the greater whole of which you're a part.
Right.
So, you know, once you begin to understand that and recognize that you, the fear inside of you, then you can start becoming your true self. Because how are you going to be your true self if the entire time you're wandering around like some little immortal, pretending that everything that you have, you're going to keep in this nonsense right. about, like, this is something Marcus Aurelius, like, writes about. Just like, are you seriously worried about preserving your memory in the future? Guess what? You're not going to be there, dumbass.
Right. There is no future.
Yeah. There's no future. It's like drawing a bath for yourself that you don't get to take.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're not going to get to experience anything after your nervous system shuts down, at least in the normal way that you're experiencing right now. And your attachment to the little human body that you're part of right now is right. the very thing that is that's keeping you from experiencing the big bursts of ecstasy you get with exhilarating, crazy sense of whatever the fuck it is that you experience when suddenly you realize right. that you're the thing that you thought you were isn't you at all.
Right. Yeah, because the what the hell is you is one of those other big Buddhist questions that is like, what the hell is you?
Your what sense is you?
Of identity, where does it come
where
from?
Where does it come from?
It's not your body, obviously, since your body goes through so many changes every minute of the day, let alone over a period of years. Your opinions, assuming you're smart and open-minded, do change over time.
Absolutely.
Your emotions, again, can change quite a lot. And yet, you know, the funny thing is that you can't find it anywhere, because if you break down everything that we think we are not. And at the same time, there is a sense of continuity. You know, yes. there is a sense that if it happens to me now, it's different than if it happens to somebody else. It doesn't, I don't feel it the same way. I don't, you know, there's something that's feeling that. Yes. And it's not feeling that other thing happening to that guy. So it's, that's like one of the ultimate mind trips, you know, trying to figure out what the hell is the that you. That makes you you.
What is it?
Hell if I know. If I had the answer, I would be the, you know, nobody. I've never heard anybody who can, other than a dumbass, who can confidently say this is the answer, you know?
You know what I think of it as sometimes? I think of it as our entire human experience is like a biological blindfold tied around the eyeballs of infinity. So, like, actually, the thing...
Oh, yeah, that was my second answer. That's right. You know, I sorry, I forgot that part. Yes, yes, of course. I could have not... Yeah.
But it's... You know what I mean, man? When you realize, like, the thing that you think is your... is experience.
Uh-huh.
Everything that you think is you. Everything, your feelings, your vision.
Yeah.
The whole thing. The thought process that's allowing you to be introspective itself. All the way back, it's just a blindfold that is concealing infinity from you.
Right.
The moment that that was gone, you would be infinite again. Right. You would merge into infinity. You would be an infinite nothingness. But this temporary little meaty bit of jerky you call yourself has somehow managed to get in the eyeballs of God, and all God can see is this crazy, neurotic, screaming, dying person for a second. Like, fuck. That's what it's probably like. When you die, it's probably just like God wiping you out of his eyeball. Like, ugh, I thought I was a fucking Duncan Trussell. It was just a fucking little speck in my eye. Now I can enjoy being nothingness or everythingness or whatever isness again.
But I'm confused by this podcast. You invited me over because we're supposed to talk about Justin Bieber and Kim Kardashian. What
Listen,
happened?
It's on my mind.
Okay, good.
And it's this kid. This kid. He's losing his mind. Poor little Mayan sacrifice. That poor little son of a bitch. We fatten these little goddamn turds up and then we throw them off the building every fucking time.
Of course.
It's just it's an elevator that just doesn't go back. The way it goes down is by being pushed off the side.
Yep.
Once and he's right. So what? He's being a fucking teenager. You know, it's like, but we are a vicious, disgusting, brutal, sick society in that way. And I'm sorry to rail against society. It's not that. It's just a normal archetype. I've talked about it before, but the idea is that child sacrifice is a very old, old tradition
right.
for the human race. And what you do is you get a little baby, you say, God's picked this little baby, you fatten the little baby up, give it everything that it could want, things that nobody else in the tribe could have. It's having the most glorious life ever. It's actually kind of the same thing that we do to the fucking turkeys.
Right.
Feed the shit out of that thing. Fatten it up. That turkey thinks it's the chosen one. It thinks it's got gold records.
It is the chosen one.
It is the chosen one.
A different way.
There's a philosopher. I can't remember the name. You probably remember. There's a philosopher who uses the example of the turkey. So for the turkey, every day of the year is a great day. It's getting you know, if the turkey were introspective at all and didn't have a brain the size of a pin, a pea, then it would think, my God, man, there's something very special about me, because these humans are fucking feeding me such great food every day. And then, you know, its head gets cut off a couple of days before Thanksgiving.
Yep.
That's what we do to the little, these poor child pop stars. You let them, I mean, not that Justin Bieber doesn't have talent. If you don't think Justin Bieber has talent, you're an idiot, because I know I can't sing and dance like that kid can. He's definitely got talent. It's not a question of like, of just like choosing some random person and making them famous. It's even worse than that.
You know, to be perfectly honest, I have no fucking idea what we are talking about, because the Justin Bieber of the world, Kim Kardashian, I really, other than having heard the name and seen a picture, that's about, oh, and in Kardashian's name, porn, which also helps. But other than having seen that, you know, it's like, come on, I have no fucking idea. I don't think I ever heard one note out of Justin Bieber.
Well, it's fascinating. You should watch the movie, and it's cool to like, I used to think, oh, well, you know, ignore celebrity culture too. Right. But it's like, no, don't ignore. It's because these people are experiencing the Justin Bieber experience of life is such a rarefied experience, because you're dealing, I mean, just imagine being surrounded in auditoriums every night by screaming, worshiping, adoring humans.
Right. Well, I don't have to imagine
that. I mean, that's right. That's what you experience
Tuesday
when you...
Tuesday night, right.
It's just like, come on, man. That kind of... That level of attention on a human being will have the same putrefying effect on the personality that leaving milk out in the sun will have on a glass of milk. It's just going to curdle and rot a being. Unless you know, some Justin Bieber needed a fucking Tibetan llama to follow him around backstage, so every time he came back, the llama could explain,
right,
this is all an illusion, it's not going to last, you're going to blink and be on your deathbed, don't think that you're God or whatever it is that you think, don't piss in buckets. Sorry, this is a weird rant. I don't have any real opinion. I guess I do have Bieber opinions.
They had during triumphs in Roman times, when the general came back from war and he was like suddenly the man that the whole city worship, right? And everybody's paying attention to this top general. They have this whole triumphal procession, and you know, the paintings brought out of all everything he has done, and they have the show of everything he has conquered and slaves and the gold, the whole deal. And everybody's basically, the entire town, in some way the entire empire, is there cheering for him. And in during the whole procession, they would have a slave right next to him who would keep whispering over and over and over again that, remember that you're mortal. Remember that you're not a god. Remember that you're going to die.
There you go. That's what Bieber needs. Not a slave, but just that's what we all need. It's like, it sounds so morbid and macabre, but it's like, no. Actually, the function of that, it's like the function of that memory, remembering. Not to be attached to anything. It's not like a party pooper. It's the way to really love what's happening. God, how precious this whole fucking thing is. Yeah. It's like, then you stop taking it for granted. It's glorious.
Of course. It's about being in the moment in that sense and enjoying the hell out of the moment. But that's all you have. It's that moment. Not that thing.
That's it. You just got to be right there.
Yeah. So hard.
Yep. So fucking hard. Every time I feel anything for anyone... God, especially girls, I just want to modulate and control and just like, I just can't let go, man. It's so hard for me to let go. Like, I really have to, like, it's really hard.
Some of it is messy because, I mean, some of the attachment comes from being an ego-driven bastard, but sometimes it's not about ego at all. Sometimes it's something complete. Like, if you're a really nice person, occasionally what can happen is that everybody you meet, if there's anything good about them, suddenly it's not just enough to have the moment of interaction. You want to fix their life. You want them to be happy forever. You want to make sure that 20 years from now, everything is, how can I do that for you? You know, it's obviously you can't, because, you know, you can't even do it for yourself, let alone for somebody else. But sometimes that desire to, I want to make it all okay for you. You know, it's a bit of a God complex, but that desire to, and not again, it's not purely about yourself. In some cases, is you really see somebody who's a sweet, nice human being, and you really want to give them the best possible in the universe.
Yes.
Lasting. And of course, the lasting part is the one that you can do. You can do in the second, you can give them whatever you want, but nothing you can do is going to last, right? And that's the... So sometimes it doesn't come just from ego, sometimes it comes from something else as well, but the end result is the same, right? Is that desire for things to last.
You think that that's the end result, is the desire for things to last, yeah, when you're trying to help somebody?
In the case is, I don't just want you to be happy now, I want you to be happy forever.
Oh, right.
I can make you laugh now and you're happy, but then I know that 3 years from now, you know, a meteor is going to fall on your head. No, I need you to be happy.
You're just all caught. Yeah, and the moment you're there, man, you just always know, like, if you're feeling, like, anxious, you know, a lot of the times you're feeling anxious either because you're not taking care of shit that you should have taken care of, but sometimes you're feeling anxious because you're considering the future, or you're considering, yeah, the past. It's like we're in a cattle run.
Sure.
We're in a cattle run, and on one side is the past and on one side is the future, and those are both electric fences, and every, mm-hmm, time you bump into one, it fucking hurts.
Yep.
So somehow it's like if you just manage to not do that, and like, but what does that even mean, being in the present moment? Are you in the moment right now?
Just the fact that I thought about it, I would say that's a no.
So the moment you think I'm in the moment, you're not even in the moment.
Right.
Right. That's the thing. The moment you're, yeah, like when I've been meditating, like I'll, you know, you, for me, I'll sit down, I'll start just watching my breath in through the nose, out through the mouth, and I'll watch. And then you feel the body and you're like, oh, what do you know? My leg hurts or my back hurts a little bit. And then you like go a little deeper and you're like, God damn, I need to fucking email this person back or that person, sure, back, or make, yeah, this phone call or shit. God damn it, I've got to handle, what the fuck, how did I forget that? And then if you just ignore that, then you go, it's like a submarine going down.
Right.
And then you go past that little shell or whatever, and then, or maybe you don't go, but you just watch this weird whirl. And I've noticed that there's this crescendo that happens with every single thought impulse. So it starts off as this kind of innocuous thing, crescendos with some, I don't know, some reason that I shouldn't be sitting there anymore, and then dissipates back into nothingness. But then all of a sudden, if you sit there long enough, or I've experienced these millisecond periods where none of that's there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's nuts. Where all of a sudden, yeah, it's like, oh, nothing. There's nothing. I've, and just like what you're saying, it's like the moment you're like, oh, shit. Holy fuck. Holy fuck. I was suddenly like, yep, completely tranquil. Like I was suddenly, what the fuck was that? What was that that just happened? Because suddenly it was like, it's like being in a very polluted city and the smog for 1 second parts and you look up and there's like a sky and you're like, what? Wait, what the fuck? In the moment you're like, what the fuck? The clouds have come back.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, once you start, you know, one of the most powerful psychedelic moments I've ever had, actually, oddly enough, did not involve drugs.
Ah.
It was, I was a teenager. I was probably 14 or 15, something like that. And I was in Italy, sitting on the beach. It was April, so it was still cold enough that there's basically nobody on the beach, but warm enough that it's pleasant to sit there and you're not freezing your ass off. And I was reading Timothy Leary at the time, that I really dug. And after a while, I would put down my book and I would just sit there and sort of stare at the waves, stare at the sun. That's the part where it may be a bit chemical, because I was probably looking at the sun straight on a bit too long, which does seem, it's dangerous, by the way, probably not a good idea to do long term, but
right,
didn't really hurt me at the moment for whatever reason, didn't hurt my eyes at all or anything. And I would keep doing it for a while, and after a while, I really just had this dramatic shift in consciousness where I was just, the whole universe was insanely beautiful. And I didn't take any chemical substance into my body to make that change happen, right? I was just looking around and I would see the sky above me. And there was no visual hallucination, you know? It's not like suddenly I see something different. I'm seeing the same three-dimensional reality that anybody else sees, the same three-dimensional reality that I was seeing an hour before or an hour later. But the beauty of it all was like 30 million times intensified. It was just, everything looked miraculous. Literally everything looked like a miracle. And, you know, it was such a amazing, awesome, deep experience that, you know, then within minutes, once I left the beach, walked up, I was still running on this high that lasted for a while. And then I think like the second somebody started talking to me, and I was like, it was all gone, right? And I was like, fuck. But, you know, it was still awesome. It was still beautiful for what, because it wasn't like a minute thing. It lasted a good chunk of time. It was, and those moments, it's a real deep shift in how you relate to the universe, what you even feel and perceive in, and precisely like any kind of semi-mystical experience, you can't really put into ordinary language because there's nothing.
Why objective. Is that a semi-mystical? That sounds mystical.
Yeah, but you know, if you say, you know, my mystical experience, you're an asshole. So is that, let's say.
Isn't that terrible? Who are these sons of bitches goddamn controlling when I could say mystical or not?
I like that.
You
That's
fucks,
a good
point. Go fuck yourself. I'll tell you when I'm having a mystical experience, you judgmental shitbags. Go
I
to
like
your
that.
Own fucking Himalayan cave and stare at a wall.
Good.
But you had a mystical experience.
So,
not a semi-mystical.
As I was saying, in my mystical
like the
experience.
Between an
right.
erection and if you're yeah. telling a story that involves an erection,
right.
make it an erection, not a semi erection, or the story's
yeah,
not going to be as good.
Semi erections, nobody wants them.
No, there's
yeah.
no like love story where no. the guy's like, I had a semi erection when no. I made love
Definitely.
With my sweet soulmate. You had a mystical experience, friend, not a half flaccid, geriatric, old, withered. You had a mystical goddamn experience.
So. But I was having my mystical hard on. It was... you can't really put it into words because there's nothing that's happening that's objectively different. That's like, you know, and then this purple unicorn popped out of the sky. No, it's not like that. There's nothing that's happening right. that you can point to and say, this is what made the experience.
Yeah.
It's a shift in how you perceive things. It's not a shift in the things themselves. There's a Zen poem about how this one dude is out drawing water from the well and chopping wood. And I forget how it's translated, but basically something along the lines of how amazing, how miraculous, I'm chopping wood and drawing water, which, are, yeah. you know, back in the old days would have been the most ordinary activities that anybody has to do every day,
yeah.
right? You need to burn wood to keep warm. You need yeah. to have water from the well. But that shift in consciousness right there, where the most ordinary moment can appear the source of all ecstasy because
yeah.
you are not you anymore. There's something else going on there. There's a different thing that takes over.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably the same thing that happens when someone's laying in a hospital bed in a coma and have been dreaming that they're a little fleck on the wall for
right.
their entire lives. And all of a sudden they have one quick realization that they're a person in a hospital bed
right.
and their entire universe that they thought was... the entire limited universe of the person in a coma suddenly shatters, and it's like, wait, what the fuck?
Yep.
That's a kind of mystical experience.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
that's it. That's it. Those are moments where the amnesia goes away for a second. It's like, hey, look where you really are. Wow, that's cool. You're
yeah.
sobering up. I call that sobering up. Those what we call mystical experiences are actually the experience of God coming down from getting stoned on human neurology. It's like those moments where infinity isn't so fucking high on having a brain and a skeleton that it's like, shit, I'm everything. Yet
right.
consciousness
yeah.
is still here.
Does that ever happen to you? I'm actually curious. I'll tell you what happened as far as I can remember with me. Tell me if it has a parallel or it sounds totally crazy or something. I feel like there's a side of me that just, Daniele, my personality, my weaknesses, my strengths, whatever, pleasant. I like Daniele, cool, but, you know, nothing all that dramatic about him. And then there's something else that kicks in certain moments where there's a level of presence, of intensity, of depth that, like, leave my ordinary personality in the dust way far back, and is, I can't even say it's better or worse. It's not like it does some, they're just a level of presence that's completely unlike what this other person, that my normal person that I am, is. Does that sound just completely schizophrenic to you? Does that sound like there's a parallel in your own experience? Do you have an idea what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah,
here?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, I when I'm involved, the more involved I am in a thing, the more the thing sucks.
Hmm.
That's what I figured out. The more involved in a thing I am, the less involved I am in a thing, specifically creativity, the greater, but the more what comes out of me is something that I is something that I like. So, yes, I do know what you mean. I think it's just a matter of like the I don't know. I do know what you mean. It just seems to be this constant game of letting go to get to that point. But you can't even want to get to that point. It's like you just have to like give up. You do have to just give up.
It's weird. I was having this discussion with somebody about writing, because I'm glad you brought it up in terms of creativity and that creative moment, because I was talking with this guy who was a very well-established writer, and so I was trying to say, oh, you know what I'm talking about, right? And he had no fucking idea what I was talking about, because what I was saying is, for me, writing is in some ways a painful process.
Yes.
Because I have to shed the layers of my ordinary self to get to this stage where I feel like literally the metaphors that the ancient poets would use feel real. Like you feel like the muse is riding you. And I don't necessarily mean it in a sexual way, even though I kind of dig that image.
Yeah.
But the muse is taking over. There's something else that enters your consciousness. You're still there, but not much of you is there. And so there's this other force that goes through you, and then by the time you're done, you're like somebody who has been through a voodoo possession or something. Your body's just beat, right?
Yes.
You feel like, God damn, that was so intense. And it wasn't really you, but it was through you. It was like this, again, the way the ancient Greeks, right, they would conceive as the gods taking over the body of a human being to do whatever it needs to be done.
Fuck yes.
And he's like, and this dude, I had no idea what I was talking about. To him, he's like, writing is entertainment. I'm coming up with some cool sentences. And I'm like, really? That's what, you know, and yeah, I can crank down, you know, 30 million words a minute. And I'm like,
wow.
I was like, okay, we both write. It's just, and I'm not saying what you're doing is a bad thing. Good for you.
Yeah.
It's so foreign to me.
People have different ways of accessing it, man. And it's like, you know, it's just, yes, I know what you mean. Some people, I think, don't understand this idea at all. But if one of your synapses suddenly gained awareness of itself and felt a thought coming through it, it would probably, I'm making this up completely. I don't know what an experience of a synapse in the mushy darkness of a human brain would be like. But I imagine it would think two things. The first thing it would think is, I am meant to do this.
Right.
This is exactly what I'm here for. Mm-hmm. Indeed it is. You're a synapse. You're supposed to be transmitting neuroelectricity. And then probably the second thing it would think is like, fuck, this is intense. There's like energy rolling through me right now. I don't even know what it is. I have to take a quick break. Excuse me, Danielle. I have to pee. Drank too much coffee.
Go for it. Round two.
Round two. Back. Synapses, man. And that's the feeling I get when I'm writing and when it's happening and when it's working. It's just this feeling of like, whoa, shit, I've hit pay dirt here. I don't know what this stuff is coming out of me, but god damn it, look at that. It's great. Or it seems great to me. And I know when I haven't hit pay dirt.
Oh yeah, of course. You sit there and you're like, yeah, this sentence is all right, but it's not it.
It's the opposite.
And then there's the human element. When you come up with like two or three good sentences that just explode out of you, that you feel like this power that's emerging, you're like, okay, break now. Let me look at the internet, okay? Can we go back to watching Kim Kardashian porn? Can we do something else? Because this is too intense. And you're like, no, go back. I'm like, no, I don't want to go back. Okay, fuck. Okay, let's go back in.
Yeah.
Take a deep breath. Go under. And again you go. And this...
And you feel magnetized to it it's like that thing you're talking about. You pull yourself away, and there's this irresistible draw back to it. And if you let yourself go back to it, it's like grabbing an electric fence or something. You will go back into another seizure of the thing coming through you.
Yep, that's why one thing that I always say is I really hate writing. I love having written. You know, afterwards, when I can sort of get the experience of, damn, that beautiful flow that I got in that moment, but I'm not in that moment. It feels so much better to remember it. In that moment, it's like, some of it is amazing, but then there's also the fatigue, the difficult of keeping that balance right there, where you're still conscious enough to put all the words flowing together, but without so much heaviness that you prevent the process from happening.
Yeah.
you are like right on that rope, right at the edge. And if you go 1 inch one way or 1 inch the other, you're gone.
Damn right, you're gone.
To me, that's why there's Tom Robbins, for example. He writes how he, if he writes one good page in a day, he's ecstatic. He's perfectly happy, right? He takes a long time to write. Because to him, every damn word has to come out that way.
Yeah.
Has to be, and it's intense, but
that's so hard.
To me, that's what creativity is about. Otherwise, you're like an entertainer, which I don't mind. You know, entertainment has its place. It's good. It's fun. But it's not the same thing. You know, it's not channeling any, I don't know. To me, I dig the niche, you know, of everything that's written. I only care about what's written with one's blood. You know, it has to come from your guts. It has to come from way deep down in you. Otherwise, why the fuck am I reading you?
Have you heard that Bill Hicks joke about rock and roll? How he wants his... Hold on, I'm going to play it for you. Hang on. Hold on, let me find it.
Kids on the Block albums backwards.
They sound better, yeah.
Oh, come on, Bill. They're the new kids. Don't pick on them. They're so good. They're so clean cut. And they're such a good image for the children. Fuck that. When did mediocrity and banality become a good image for your children? I want my children to listen to people who fucking rocked! I don't care if they died in puddles of their own vomit! I want someone who plays from his fucking heart!
Mommy, the man Bill told me to listen to has a blood bubble on his nose.
Shut up and listen to him play!
The new kid. Ah, we're the new kid. But we're so good and clean, too.
We're so clean cut.
You come, come, come.
A good clean country. Fuck that! I want my rock stars dead! I want them to fucking play with one hand and put a gun in their other fucking head and go, I hope you enjoyed the show!
Isn't that great? What a great joke, man.
Yeah, but it's not even a joke. It's real.
Exactly.
It's totally real.
And that idea of just sacrificing your body, like Sartre destroys his body with amphetamines.
Right.
Says that he destroyed his body with amphetamines so that he could write that stuff. To me, that is such a glorious thing if it's done with the intention of fully connecting to the universal whole or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Playing from your heart, transmitting the depths mm-hmm. and essence of your being.
Yep.
Not being a safe person in this pursuit. That fucking thing, goddammit, not strategizing your plan, not coming up with your fucking brand image. What about that? You know, like all these fucking pseudo goddamn artists, and some of them can seem so, I'm sorry to say pseudo artists. Goddammit, the moment you say that, you become guilty of the worst crime ever, which is
cut yourself some slack. Just go.
It's this fucking goddamn tendency of people just planning it out, you know? People planning it out too much. It's let's just cut to the fucking chase, man.
That's why to me is like when you hear the process of creating a book, when you have to deal with and 7 million agents and publisher and seeing telling you know, but if you did it this way, you would actually reach this different demographic. And if you add a chapter about this, and it's just like, I mean, I get it. You know, you want to sell books and it makes sense and that's the job. But that's not why I do this. You know, this is not why it needs to be. Again, it's putting your heart and soul on the page to the point where it hurts. It's not about selling books. That's why when I did the second book, I did 50 Things. That's a book that I enjoy reading it, but that's entertainment. You know, when I go back and I'm like, oh, that was actually a funny thing I threw in there. Ha ha. Oh, yeah. That was cool. that's entertainment. It's good
yeah.
as entertainment, but it doesn't speak to me in the same way as some the other stuff I've done, which people may dig it better or worse. That's a whole different game. But some other stuff has my heart. That has my game. I'm playing there. I'm putting a good show on, you know? It's a very, very different thing. If somebody say, well, we strike that out of existence, you never wrote it, I'm like, oh, that sucks, because it had some really good jokes here and yeah. there. It had some good moments, but whatever. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really... If you take some of the other things, that it's like your children, you know? It's like, that's me. That's yes. my, you know? And that's what, to me, anybody who creates anything, at least part of what they create should be like that. Should be where it's there, it comes from their bones, you know, it comes from so deep within that yeah. it's... Otherwise, what are we doing, you know?
Yeah, like, what are we doing?
What's the point?
What are you doing?
Yeah.
What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Because it's no fun, you know, producing shit because you think the people are going to like it, or producing shit with the intention of using it as a bait to catch green rectangles.
Yeah.
It's like... ultimately it doesn't feel good.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like having sex with someone you don't love.
Right.
It feels good in a certain way, in a kind of like visceral like way, but ultimately it's just kind of like, you know, kind of, I don't know, orgasmic aerobics or something.
Orgasmic aerobics.
You know?
That's actually sound better. At least somebody gets an orgasm out of
that
it.
That sounds a lot better than fucking aerobics. It's definitely a few steps up from aerobics. But it's not that when you're in love with somebody and you're connecting and you have sex with them, you feel like fusion is – it is fusion. You're experiencing this kind of metaphysical, intense, beautiful fusion. It's fucking – when you're creating stuff because you're like allowing yourself to for once just be a conduit, it's just annoying, man. Like – it reminds me of this thing in the Chronicles of Narnia. I've got a shotgun. I'm going to go blow my brains out.
I think you should.
No, I don't mean the movie. The books are good.
Okay.
But there's a thing.
The movie is like one of the worst things I've ever seen.
The movie is just, you know, the movie is exactly what we're talking about. The movie is what happened when Satan got, you know, Satan came to Earth and took C.S. Lewis's beautiful Christian metaphors and turned it into a fucking steaming turd and shit it out in the face of the children of America and went cackling back to hell with a fucking bag full of money. But the
true story, by the way.
True story. You could watch the making of the Chronicles of Narnia movies. But you take one thing Aslan, who's like supposed to represent Jesus. I've said this on this podcast before because I love it. One thing he said is, I am not a tame lion. And that, to me, was C.S. Lewis's way of saying, like, if you think that this like Christ image that you've created is some kind of buttoned down, you know, Tea Party member or something, you're out of your goddamn mind, man. This is a force of total power, the embodiment of love, which is the essence of all things. This is the force of all power surrendering to its own destruction. So you're looking at literally what I would consider to be the splitting of the atom metaphysically.
Right.
Buddhism, you have the awakening of human, the human embodiment of pure awakening. But in Christianity, you have the destruction, you have the oil and water. You have the mix of pure absolute love meeting matter, resulting in the metaphysical explosion, which represents the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Which brings me to something I've been wanting to talk about.
Do tell.
In the end of Waking Life, they talk about this idea. I think Philip K. Dick had it. Apparently, it's some kind of Gnostic idea, but the notion is that the experience, if there was a God, if Jesus really was, literally, for whatever reason, infinity actively embodied itself in the form of a human.
I want to be a Jewish man 2000. Yeah, of course. That's what infinity does all the time.
Just like, you know, that's, you know, just zapped into this being.
Yeah.
The being is crucified, right? And the somehow the potency of that crucifixion creates a subjective Big Bang effect in which the personality of that being splits into an infinite number of smaller beings, of which we are all one tiny fragmental portion. And the experience that we were talking about earlier of that internal suffering, the horror, what Buddhism calls mm-hmm. the fear body, the internal terror, is in fact the experience of you being crucified because you are Jesus and you aren't able to accept the fact that you're dying on a cross and you're hallucinating being every single person after your crucifixion. And so the surrender moment that happens when you wake up or whatever is when your body dies, or suddenly you're like, oh, fuck, I'm still on this fucking cross. Shit, I'm being crucified for real. Oh, no. And then you zap back into being a person again
right.
until finally you get to that point that happens in the New Testament where Jesus says, into your hands I commend my spirit. Until you finally just let go and you're like, God damn it, I'm going to die. Yes, I'm going to let go completely and stare at the sun and be on the beach and turn into everything. You know, that's a cool psychedelic idea.
Sure. And that's when the merciful Roman come to stab him in the side with a spear to end his suffering.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. The fucking spear of destiny, brother, that Hitler tried to chase down.
Yeah. That
it's a beautiful story.
No, but I mean, it's also, it's very similar to the whole Hindu idea of like all of life being a game played by this one god for entertainment, splits in all these different beings, all these different creatures, and in order to play it well you have to forget that you are the runner of the game. It's like, if you guys, those of you guys who are only children, you may be familiar with it. You spend a hell of a lot of time imagining like 70,000 games to play, except that you have no one else around to play with, so you play all the roles, right? And you can cheat, so you all of the you you like best wins versus the you that you are just playing somebody else, kind of thing. There's all this, and it's the most fun is when you are becoming less conscious that you're really running the whole show. And that's where you're enjoying it the most. Now, that's the whole Leela story about this Hindu idea about the game of God, this fact that you need to completely forget that you are it in order to really enjoy the process, play all the roles, do the whole thing.
Yeah.
And the big haha moment in history is when suddenly then God wakes up and is like, oh, this is like 30 million creatures that I thought I was, it was just still me. It was me this one, it was me that one, it was me killing this one, it was also me. And, you know, that whole... That's that, hey, if nothing else, it's a cool story.
Yeah, it's a cool story, but then that God is going to be like, well, what am I now?
Right.
That's a real tricky problem. You know, that, because it only goes so far, the idea of the whole God waking up thing. Like, what do you know? I was everything.
He's a sad only child.
Now I'm just alone infinitely. No!
Let's start again. Let's play the game again. Yes.
I like the idea, the Hare Krishna idea, the Bhakti Yoga idea, which is that there is God known as Krishna, and Krishna has the lover, Radharani, and Radha is God's eternal consort. And their lovemaking is so pleasurable. Instead of it being this goddamn neurotic crucifixion moment that causes everything split into everything, then it's actually the orgasm happening between God and God's eternal lover that creates this intense hallucinatory moment where God splits into everything. And when you fall in love with somebody and you see someone you love, or you love your child, or you love your mom, or you love your life, or you love your job, or you experience love, really what you're experiencing is a glimpse of your eternal lover shining through the body or the situation that you're currently experiencing. That's hot. I love that idea.
Yeah, I can live with that considerably better than with nails planted in your wrists or some shit. Nearly as fun. Who came up with it? You know, definitely one gets an A+ in mythology. The other one, you could use, you know, not so dark, man.
I have to choose between dying and waking up to realize I'm some emaciated Jew being executed by fucking Romans, or waking up to find myself in the infinite embrace of God.
Sound considerably better.
I'll take the latter, please.
Yeah. By the way, I can never hear the word Krishna again without cracking up anymore. Because my daughter got addicted on YouTube to this cartoon Hindi cartoon translated into English. I forget the real title. We call it Baby Krishna because it's Krishna as a tiny baby who does all these miraculous, crazy things. And she treats it like, you know, she watched Spider-Man and then she watches Baby Krishna. And it's to her, it's the same, right? It's all the same stuff. And so a good chunk of my day spent with my identity is Baby Krishna. And she's my mom and she has to yell at me. But then she's happy because I'm goofy and funny and I make miracles and I do crazy things and my skin is blue and all of that. But all day long, all I'm hearing is like, Krishna. By now, when I hear Krishna, I'm going like, yeah, who called me? Because that's what the character I have to play all day long.
See, now the Krishnas would say that your daughter is being drawn into the path of bhakti and that this was just like her little, you know, it's kind of like the memento idea, which is like in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks Krishna, what happens if you fall away from the spiritual path? And Krishna's response is, there is neither any loss nor diminution along this path. Any step forward is a permanent step forward. And so in your next life, you're given a good birth where you get to come back into contact with whatever transcendental knowledge you were studying originally that gets you back on that path.
Right.
And so this moment of like coming into a contact with a Hindi Krishna cartoon is in fact your daughter's brush up against this like beautiful form of Hinduism called Bhakti Yoga, which uses the symbol of Krishna as the access point to connect with eternal love.
I like that. It's a considerable, I know for a fact, I can tell you that it's a considerable step up to where I was before we discovered Baby Krishna, which because we don't have a dog in the house and my mom has a dog, so her grandma, I had to play the dog inside the house, so just about all day long I was Nico the dog, and I had to bark and go oof oof and eat dog biscuits and all of that. So I dig Baby Krishna is definitely a step up.
Yeah,
right,
it's better to play God than play some mutt.
Yeah. The other day, by the way, I was getting I was receiving an acupuncture treatment, and I was laying there, and I pass out and I fall asleep, and all of a sudden I hear somebody bark. And so I wake up, I'm like, what the fuck was that? And then I realize it was me. I was barking because I was having a dream that I was a dog and some stranger I didn't like came up. And I was like, rah, rah, rah. And I woke up, I'm like, yeah, that was weird. Okay, on that note. Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I love that shit, man. But dreaming you're some completely different thing and then waking up.
Acting upon it.
Yeah, that's it. I love that, man. I, you know, guys, forgive me if I repeat shit I've said in past podcasts, but this is something that I... this is actually, I think, my first podcast with Rogan. I'd been thinking about this, and I probably told it to you, but it's worth bringing up again because it's this idea of reincarnation, which is like, because I had one of the weirdest dreams I still remember to this day. I was a little girl. I was laying with my mom. I was sick. I knew I was sick. I was a little girl, and I knew I was sick, and I knew I was dying, but I didn't understand what dying meant. But they had told me I was dying. So I knew that I was dying, but I had no conception of it at all. And I knew that something was wrong with my brain and that I was dying. So my mom's like stroking my hair and she's so sad. And I'm laying there and I'm like, I'm dying. Like, oh, this is dying. And she's stroking my hair. And then I woke up.
Jesus.
And I'm like, what the fuck? That was a crazy fucking dream. And then I started thinking like, shit, what if that's reincarnation?
Yeah.
What if reincarnation isn't that you are born as a baby and you then have this continuous life that ends with your death as whatever you were before and starts as a fetus and ends with your death?
Sure.
But literally you die and you wake up in the middle of other people's lives with all the memories embedded there. There's no break. There's no childhood. Mm-hmm. You don't get to experience childhood. You're just this blip of consciousness that's constantly playing leapfrog through the bodies of all the various beings that you end up temporarily inhabiting. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it goes on forever. There's no break, no vacation, no fucking South of France trip where you get to go back to some new age metaphysical beach, you know, whatever the new agers say. You know, you get to go into some kind of cosmic alien hot spring and get massaged by devas and interdimensional beings until you decide you want to go back on Earth and be a kid with leukemia or a fucking starving person or a tiger or a hawk or whatever. That nonsense. It's just this infinite bam, 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 life after life after life after life for infinity, no break.
Do you have any beliefs? Is a stupid word anyway, because like beliefs. What the fuck are they based on? But do you have any inklings? Do you have any feelings regarding afterlife? Anywhere where you go, you feel like, you know what? Of course, I can speak with any certainty, but I kind of get the feeling that this is what's up.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Do tell.
Thanks for asking. This is what I know. The greatest things I experience, my greatest experiences always have as one of their first thoughts, this is not what I thought it was going to be. That's number one. Number one, it's always this sense of like surprise, like, mm-hmm. Whoa, I didn't expect this to be. This is like, it's the revelatory moment where you realize like, this is like something a million times outside of what my expectations were for this. And it's a million times better because my expectations were limiting it.
Yeah.
Second thing I've experienced in life is the things that I'm the most afraid of always end up being the greatest things and always end up being the thing that like that bring to me the most pleasure ultimately in the long run, or that bring to me the most this sense of like, oh, or mm-hmm. like when I was in the pool with Ram Dass and he's floating there and he goes, he's like, gets this big grin on his face and he's like, wow. It's just a swimming pool, you know, but you,
nice.
So that's what I think when you die. I think when you die, it's got to be it's probably the ultimate version of that, maybe, ultimately, maybe, I don't know, maybe you ping pong through incarnations, or maybe you die, and it's something that you couldn't conceptualize if you had a billion years to try to conceptualize it, and it's a billion times better than anything you could have possibly expected. And perhaps it's only one pulsation in an ever-increasing, exponentially accelerating, orgasmic moment that the universe has been having for infinity. Maybe that's what it is.
So with that in mind, do you feel, are you afraid of death?
Because
it sounds pretty damn good the way you put it.
Yeah, I'm terrified, man. I mean, it sounds good, but who the fuck knows? Like, I don't know. If we knew, then it wouldn't be the thing. It's like, the goddamn ride. I mean, the whole point of the ride is you don't know what's on the other side. It's like, if you went into a fun, the first time you go into a fun house, it's a blast. The second time you go in, it's like, here comes the spider again.
Yeah.
You know, so whatever this rush is, or this thing that we're set up to experience, or whatever it is, if you want to apply the idea that there's some kind of logic or meaning behind it, and you're not just a swirl of particles that's accidentally manifest in the form of a human being that's had the curse of being aware of the fact that it's not going to last very long. If you want to apply logic beyond that, then maybe part of the trip is you don't know, because the moment you really, truly, authentically knew, then you would have already died.
Right.
And maybe that's when maybe that's like the thing that Christ says, you must die to this world to come to know me. You have to die. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's the...
There's no metaphor there. It's you have to die, motherfucker.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
We all want it to be this, you know, when you hear the sweet Lord Jesus Christ and all the other great saints use these different terms that always involve some form of death, ego death. If not death, rebirth.
Sure.
But let me tell you, guess what? To be reborn?
Yeah, there's a...
There's a ticket.
Yeah. As Peter Tosh would say, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die.
Yeah, exactly, man. Exactly. Yeah. To be reborn, you got to die.
Yeah.
That's the fucking price, man.
Right.
And you get to do that either, you know, you are going to do it. Guess what? You've been invited to that fucking party, and there's no way out of it. But... I think the cookie, or the what do they call it? The thing that in video games they put in the Easter egg.
Oh, yeah.
The Easter egg built into this dimension is that you can actually die before you die.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually die before you die. And that leads to the rebirth that they talk about, this is why the Masons, the Freemasons, right, apparently have you climb up out of a coffin. This is why there's all these rituals that involve the being reborn.
Yeah, of course. No, of course, definitely. How about people that you are close to, people that you have known a lot that died? I'm sure there's...
My mom?
Well, there's the obvious, right? I'm sure there's probably more than
your
that.
Your wife?
Yeah, there's a lot. Do you ever get feelings like, do you feel like, did you ever feel anything like there was something there that was still around, or did you ever feel like a presence or anything?
Oh,
or
when I was in Hawaii at this, God damn it, I've talked about the meditation retreat so much, every time I say it, I'm embarrassed now, but yeah, man, I was like singing this kirtan, Hare Krishna, this Hare Krishna kirtan that had been going on for a while. I was very stoned. I'm going into this deep trance state. And then all of a sudden, photographically in my mind, with a photographic memory, I'm looking around and I'm at, when I was very young, like very, very young, parents are still married. I think I must have been like, I don't know, man, 6 or 5. I was very young. We would go to this house in St. Simons Island, Georgia with my grandmother. And it was this beautiful house with a tile floor that there was this sliding glass door, a yard beyond that. There was a golf course beyond that. And then there was I remember there was roly-polies I could play with, those little bugs, and it was like everything smelled really good. And like, so all of a sudden, in my mind, I'm back there, and I see it. Like, it's like I'm there. It's like I'm in it again. Like, shit, I've completely forgotten. Right. Little details, I'm there. And I'm there with my mom. And it didn't seem shocking or odd or weird. I was just there with my mom, and my mom says to me, "We had fun, didn't we?" That's about as close a contact as I've had with her since she died, but sure as hell seemed just real and as natural as could be. And then the next thing that she said to me is, "Tell your brother I love him and I'm excited about the baby he's about to have." It was like, it just seemed just like, you know, just was like, and there wasn't this, it didn't feel like I was trying to cling to her. This just this sense of like, it happened so quickly that it was over before I could really be like, wait, what? And then it was just like, oh, and then I was back and like singing Hare Krishna again. So yeah, I don't know. You know what? I don't know. I'm going to let that one just float around and be whatever it was. Hallucination, delusion, dream state, trance state. But man, it seemed beautiful and real, and I don't know.
We had fun, didn't we?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. It was pretty cool, man. It was pretty cool.
Beautiful.
But yeah. So I don't know. That, you know what, man? Think of your DNA. You know, like your DNA, you're as, you know, obviously your parents, you're as close genetically to your parents as you could be with anyone else, right? And I do think DNA is some kind of radio receiver for this consciousness. So and also my mom, before she died, was telling me that she had read that there's actually like your mother's DNA. It's in you, or some of your neurons, or some strange thing about how it's literally parts of them are in you, literally. So if that's true, maybe on some quantum level, you've got these tiny little antenna inside of you.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be someone genetically related to you. Maybe just the very aspect of apprehending another human being creates this kind of imprint within your human neurology that in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, they call, I believe, the vrittis, which are the imprints left by matter in your being. And those little things become their own kind of like emulators within which the essence of the person that you love can eternally be transmitted if you only tune in enough through meditation or whatever ritualistic ritual you want to use to try to communicate with the ancestors, which is in so many different religions, you know? Who knows?
That's awesome. That's you know what's funny, by the way? This is probably the third time that I have, as we are recording, I start really tripping in a weird way, as if I was high, but I'm not. And I get this weird experience, like, again, completely impossible to describe in ordinary language, so I'll let it sit at that, other than saying, it was fun.
We had thank fun, you. Didn't we? Well, I put acid in your drink.
that's probably what has to do with the fact that every time I record at your place, there's some strange...
That'd be so sad if that was true. You know, man, Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was going to try to come up with some pithy thing to say, but thank you for telling me that. And I love having you on the show.
Always fun.
Tell this audience where they can find you, please.
Twitter, D. Bolelli. D as in Daniel, B as in beer, O as in orgasm, L-E-L-L-I. So there's that. The Drunken Taoist Podcast. So if you guys check it on iTunes or check it directly from the website, any of that. And then, you know, one thing reference to the other and everything else. So from there is easy to find the books or anything else you guys are into. On my website, which is my name, danielebolelli.com, if you want to contact me, shoot me an email. I always reply. So if you don't get a reply, it means I didn't receive your email. Try again. And otherwise, on the astral plane, in some strange way, that's always a possibility. That's cool. The game.
Awesome. Go to duncantrussell.com. All the links will be on this episode. So you can find the links there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, sweet babies. This has been the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. If you like the podcast, why not take the time to give us a nice rating on iTunes?